Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft, and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson Chevrolet, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, Truck Vault, and Ray Marine Electronics.
Welcome back to The Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. So there's so many creature comforts now, handy stuff in your rig, right? There's no reason you can't bring car creature comforts into your boat. And here to tell us all about how to do that is none other than Lauren Bivens of Harbor Marine. Good morning, Professor Bivens.
Good morning, and how are you guys?
We're good this morning, man. The weather's beautiful. Great. Wishing we were on the water, but we're doing good, buddy. I've been checking out those ScanStrut products here for a little while, and I think you guys are stocking some of that stuff in the store now, aren't you, Lauren?
We sure are. In fact, it's really a terrific product. They've got a number of options for holding a number of different devices, whether you're talking about your cell phone or a small tablet, where they want you them to charge as they're sitting there, or just hold it in place while you're using it. So it's available for you to do other things with your hands, right?
Well, the cool thing, they've got a mounting system that it's almost like a RAM mount kind of a deal. You shove your phone in there, but instead of having to plug the phone in, now when I plug my phone in, the cord gets just chewed up on the boat because it's salt water. You just set your phone in there and it charges while it's sitting in there. You don't need to plug it in. You don't have to do anything. You just set it in this holder and off it goes. You can mount it right to the dash of your boat and you hardwire it into the electrical system and you're charging all the time. You don't have to plug in anything. Then you don't have a cord hanging there. It never fails. The cords, every time I get in the seat of the charter boat, the cord wraps around my leg and then it gets tangled up and then I got to mess with it, you know.
Well, and so how do you store that cord? That cord is plugged into the dash.
Yes.
It's powered. And so you got a powered phone end, charging end, that's subject to salt fog and it's going to corrode. So it's not going to work. But the cool thing is, Lauren, we use our cell phones for so very much. You got the Navionics app or whatever that's a chart plotter. You're texting other fishermen. But so many marine electronics these days allow you to use an iPad as an additional display. It'll clone another display. And that's truly what I'm excited about with this new Rock product. That and the fact with our Canon Optimum downriggers, Joey, we use an old dead cell phone that I have to run a cord to.
We have to have the cord all the time because it doesn't hold a charge. So
right.
This way, we don't have to have the cord. We run that. That basically shows us our depths on all our downriggers
at once.
And then the other cool thing, so the adding a display at the back of the boat saves you from having to buy another fish finder. You can have your big screen up front. You can have an iPad on the back. Put it in the Rock. It's not Rock. The mini.
The next size up.
Will hold a full size iPad.
There you go. So go check these out at Harbor Marine. So what else is top of mind for you if you want to bring a couple a little more dependability to your electrical system in your boat, Lauren Bivens of Harbor Marine?
Well, still using putting an extra USB charger somewhere in the boat that you won't get tangled up is still a great idea and an easy thing to do if you can find a place to put an inch and an eighth hole in somewhere and put it out of the way so that cord isn't getting wet and so on. Because they do have, after a certain amount of time, the manatee charters can only keep up so fast. And you can get the Blue Seas chargers that will pump out up to 4.8 amps. So it's, you can really recharge your device fast. So, but the key is, like you guys are saying, keep it out of the way, out of where you're working and so on and so forth. Now, I think one of the other big deals is, and it's a talk about a fast upgrade, is when you blow a fuse and you take your gear off, you get underneath the dash and you're looking around and you fumble around for a flashlight because something's not working and you're looking for the fuse that goes to that device, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what happens? You're digging around, and it's like, okay, which one is it? And you're pulling them out. Maybe you got a checker, and you're just burning all kinds of time. How nice would it be to see the fuse that's bad?
Yes. Bingo.
The blue fuse has an ATO, ATC type of fuse, the little blade type, that goes in that most of us have. And, of course, if you don't have, it's an easy upgrade, and we've got tons of choices of fuse holders. But you go in there, and if that fuse is blown, it lights up for you so you see which one it is. How
You're
amazing
kidding.
Is that?
And who makes this fuse? What?
So it's a Blue Seas fuse, and Lauren and I were looking at this, okay? So look, so there's so many boats with inline fuses, and we talked earlier in the show about glass fuses, how you need to get all those off your boat. If you chop all these inline fuses out, you co-locate them, you get a Blue Seas 100-amp distribution block, put it on your boat. Then Blue Seas has these ATO or blade fuses that plug in that have a little tiny ground in them, so when they blow, they light up. Otherwise, what are you doing? You're grabbing your pliers, and you're pulling them out and putting them in, pulling them out and putting them in, pulling them out, but you're trying to figure out which one it is. Because everybody has their boat electrical system absolutely labeled, right?
And they make these in the big size, the little sizes, all the different sizes?
Yep. Okay. Yep, their indicator fuses.
Everybody out there has been underneath pulling fuses looking for that blown fuse.
So the one that's blown lights up. It's like, here I am.
Yeah.
Get me out of here. Like sending up a little fuse emergency flare, right? They want to get rescued. Get them out of there. So very, very, very cool stuff.
The other
stuff,
thing, Blue Seas is making a water-resistant fuse block now, too. They had their last fuse block was really good, but now this one is even more water protective. I'm sure you guys have those in the store too. And also Blue Seas has the circular plugs to where if you have a cigarette lighter plug for your cell phone charger anymore, just pull it out. It's just a factory in there anyway. Yep, pull that out and just pop a little USB charger in. It's so easy to pop that thing in there and you get yourself two USB chargers out of the deal. Blue Seas makes all that stuff. You guys have basically the whole Blue Seas catalog at the store there, Lauren.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, we have thousands of Blue Seas items and, you know, it's good quality stuff. They back their product. It's easy to put in. It's just, and it all works. And it's, you know, it's a marine product. It doesn't corrode away like some other items out there in the marketplace. So, yeah, really great stuff. But we professionally install this stuff. But it's, you know, these are nice, easy projects that a guy could do over a weekend now while we got maybe a little hole in the wall waiting for the next season to open up for us. So great time and make yourself easy. That 20 minutes of frustration trying to find your fuses and which one's out and so on could be a two-minute job as opposed to that 20. So, make your life easy and change those out now.
One of the advancements, too, in recent years, Lauren, has been LED lighting for lighting up the deck of your boat, under your gunnels. I've been looking at light bars. I do some running in the dark. We hunt from the charter boat a little bit up there. We use it for transportation up in Alaska. And there's times we're running at night, and I don't like it. I don't have a big light bar on the front of the boat. I've been looking at maybe getting a new light bar for the front of the charter boat. What do you guys have in the way of LED lighting at the store there at Harbor Marine?
Well, I've got a vast array of LED stuff now. There is so much available, and you know it probably starts with just replacing the old incandescent bulbs you have now. We've got all the different styles of for your nav lights or whatever you have for lighting in your boat now, because you have an incandescent bulb in there, you can be much brighter, less amperage draw, easier on your system, get that stuff replaced. And then if you want to add like cockpit lighting we have a giant size of, you know, you can do it in colors, like you say, light bars, strips, all kinds of things under your gunnel. It just lets your mind go wild with what you want to do. The lighting is great. Like you said, when you get up early and you're get bait ready or whatever it is, it's nice to put a little low light in the cockpit or you're going along, getting out there in the water. You know, just that little bit of extra light. If something falls over on the deck or slides around, you haven't secured quite yet, you can see it and take care of that. It's just a nice added convenience and adds to the confidence of your time out there.
Yeah, no question about it. And I tell you what, just from a safety standpoint alone, replacing your boat's running lights from the old incandescent bulbs that burn out and are subject to vibration damage with those LEDs. Tell you what, you do any running in the dark, first light, you notice other people's running lights, right? And they make sure they notice yours, because one collision at sea can ruin your entire day.
I swapped all my lights over to LEDs probably about 3 years ago. And
yeah,
I haven't had to replace bulbs. And before that, it was like,
yeah,
you know,
every year,
a couple times a year, yeah, I would be replacing the bulbs mm-hmm. on my commercial boat.
Yeah, no question about it. Lauren Bivens, HarborMarine.net, down on the Everett waterfront, on your way, no matter where you're going. We thank you for your time this morning, and we'll be in touch, my friend.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys, for having me on, on the show today. Appreciate it.
See you,
right,
buddy.
No,
thanks,
Lauren. Good to hear from you, buddy. Coming up next, a critically acclaimed, award-winning Northwest Outdoor Report right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
The Northwest Outdoor Report, also known as Redneck Sports Center, is brought to you by Truck Vault, the leader in secure vehicle storage.
Steelheaders got a welcome surprise yesterday when WDFW announced that there would be a scaled-down catch-and-release season for steelhead on the Skagit and Sauk Rivers this spring. The rivers will be open 4 days a week, Saturdays through Tuesdays, from February 1st through the April 15th. Skagit will be open from the Dalles Bridge in Concrete up to the Cascade Bridge in Marble Mount, and the Sauk River will be open from the mouth on up to the Sauk Prairie Bridge in Darrington. Unlike the coastal rivers, though, anglers can fish from a boat on both of these rivers, but the boat cannot be under power. And on the Sauk River, combustion motors are not allowed. Selective gears rules apply to this fishery.
Marine Area 10 closes for winter blackmouth. Anglers are reminded that Marine Area 10 closed down for winter blackmouth on January 19th. The plan was for the area to reopen for blackmouth later in the season when the fish are bigger and the weather's better. However, when the January 19th closure was announced, the surge in participation pushed Marine Area 10 to its wild Chinook impact guideline. WDFW announced the news. The area will not be reopening again this season, as the impact guideline for wild undersized Chinook has already been met for Marine Area 10. That leaves Marine Area 13 south of the Narrows open for blackmouth, and Marine Area 5 and CQ slated open for winter blackmouth on March 1st. Marine Area 5 is scheduled to be open from that March 1st lid lifter through April 30th.
The Northern Pike Minnow Sport Reward Program just released its numbers for 2020. Last year, the program paid out over $839,000 to 2,450 anglers, with the top angler earning $48,501. That's down from the big years of 2015 and 16, when the top angler earned over $100,000 in this program. COVID definitely had an effect on the fishery last year, though, and the overall program is doing its job of reducing the number of pike minnow in the Columbia. The goal of the pike minnow program is to reduce the population of the larger pike minnows that feed on out-migrating salmon and steelhead smolt. Since 1990, the program has removed 5.2 million pike minnow from the Columbia and Snake Rivers and has reduced predation on young salmon and steelhead by up to 40%.
A reminder to all you waterfowlers out there that you've got exactly 8 days left in the general season with wintry weather forecast for the remainder of the season. It could be the perfect ending to what's been a productive waterfowl season here in Washington. After the general season closes, there's going to be some bonus snow goose days in February. Be sure to check out the WDFW regulations for the exact dates of those hunts.
Be sure to submit your crabbing and hunting reports by the end of the month. Reports can be submitted by logging on to fishhunt.dfw.wa.gov. The data submitted helps WDFW calculate success rates on the crabbing and big game seasons. If you purchased a crabbing, big game license and tag, or a waterfowl license, it's mandatory to submit a report, and failure to do so results in a $10 administrative fee the next time you buy a license.
Jason Brooks, editor of Tail Out Magazine, was just over on Lake Chelan and says the kokanee fishing is red hot over there right now. Jason was fishing with Jeff Wolkowski from Daryl and Dad's Guide Service, and they caught quick limits of kokanee near Green's Landing. Jason said the fish were holding on the 400-foot line, and they had the downrigger set at 100 feet. A sling blade dodger with either a coconut lure or cha-cha squitter behind it tipped with shoe peg corn was the ticket. Jason said Jeff soaks his shoe peg corn in Procure Bloody Tuna Scent overnight, and that definitely got bit more than anything else. The kokanee are averaging between 8 and 12 inches with a few bigger fish in the mix, and the limit is 10 kokanee per day.
Conservation Northwest just released the numbers for the Safe Passage 97 project over in Okanagan County, and it shows a staggering number of deer and other animals using the crossing. 2019 and 20, the Janus Bridge between Riverside and Tenasket was renovated to provide a crossing for animals, and 1 mile of deer fencing was installed to funnel deer towards that crossing. Last year, game cameras surveyed 2,200 deer using the crossing, and it was also used by cougar, turkeys, and other wildlife. An average of 350 deer a year are hit in that mile and a half stretch of highway on Highway 97 between Riverside and Tenasket, costing the public around $2.5 million a year in medical costs, vehicle damage, police and fire response, and WashDOT response. Conservation Northwest has worked with the Okanagan chapter of the Mule Deer Foundation on the project and hopes to get an additional 12 miles of fencing and more wildlife crossings, installed to further curtail the number of deer vehicle collisions on this stretch of highway.
This Redneck Sports Center has been brought to you by the great folks at Truck Vault in Cedro Woolley. Check out your next secure vehicle storage system at truckvault.com.
So if you log on to YouTube and you type in Safe Passage 97, there's Safe Passage 97, your animals using the Janus Bridge Wildlife Undercrossing. It's the coolest little video. They've got, I mean, you would not believe it. Ain't just deer using this thing. I mean, they've got, there's turkeys, there's cougars, okay, bobcats, ducks. I mean, it's nuts. But the bottom line is, anytime there is a deer vehicle interaction anywhere in Washington, it's a waste. Okay, so again, log on to conservationnorthwest.org and you know, that was a skunk that just rolled by. We're watching the video right
now. We got a picture of Nelly running through the tunnel there.
Yeah,
you've got quite enough pictures. Yeah, because I need more embarrassing pictures. That's out there.
I was talking to Chase yesterday, and it's incredible how fast the deer become comfortable. You know, using this is a very low bridge, so the deer, we'd probably have to squat down to walk through here. Yeah. There's a bobcat,
a bunch of turkeys.
The deer just funneling through there, and obviously, of course, you're going to see a cougar or two because, you know, there's a funnel point here for the deer. But
it's a cool project, man. And it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. You don't really think about it, but God forbid, Grandma hits a deer there at 10:30 at night and swerves off into the ditch. Who knows what's going to happen? It could end really bad. So. It's a great project. Super cool. It saves our deer that we love so much, and also could save some lives in the process. We just talked about the Skagit River. Great news. Great news that we get a fish 4 days a week up there. Not a big run forecast, just barely enough fish to get this fishery in. If you do fish up there, be sure to be cordial to the fish checkers. Give them your information because that's what keeps us fishing. Give them all the details you got. They need to keep track of this fishery. And definitely, if you're seeing a good number of steelhead in there, they need to know it too, because it helps them track the run, you know, a little bit. So definitely be cordial to the fish checkers when you participate in that fishery up there. Also, Seattle Boat Show Connected. We talked about it earlier in the show. January 28th through the 31st. Get your tickets at seattleboatshow.com right now. We don't get a boat show this year, but at least you get to walk the red carpet online and check it out from the comforts of home. And there's going to be some cool new products coming out at the boat show this year. I mentioned there's going to be a couple of custom heavy gauge aluminum boats in there that are being tricked out right now. They're coming out of the shop early this week. They're good. They're badass. I'm telling you.
They are completely badass. Yes. And one of the first actual functional aluminum bait tanks that was just completely ridiculous. Yeah. Heavy duty. You can jump up and down on them to bait tables across the back of the boat. But did you see that rear station that had a Wicked Tuna style capstan built into the rear steering station?
I did.
That's ridiculous.
Yep.
That's
so you can haul your gear. You can haul your gear right there from your stern station. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've got a system kind of like that, but that bigger wheel, dude. It's the speed of that thing is just that may be coming out to the coming on the CB's 2-32. All right. So tell you what, very very happy to have outdoor writer Jason Brooks, editor of the Tail Out magazine, Outdoor Line Chelan correspondent, and Caramel Macchiato aficionado. Jason Brooks joining us next here in the Outdoor Line 710 ESPN. Seattle.
Get in, sit down, hold on, and listen up. You're in the RenaissanceMarineGroup.com's wheelhouse, brought to you by Weldcraft, Duckworth, and Northwest Boats.
Welcome to the Weldcraft Wheelhouse here. Duckworth Weldcraft Wheelhouse. Let's have this happen. Correct. This is one of those rare segments when yours truly can just take a break.
All of us can take a break.
Did you ever have G.I. Joe with a Kung Fu grip?
And you just pull the string?
You just pull a string, right?
Yeah, okay. That's Jason.
Jason, Carmel, Macchiato, Brooks, not one, but two blogs on theoutdoorline.com this week. Talking about that Vortex Spitfire red dot and a little Chelan Kokanee. Good morning and welcome to the show, Jason
morning,
Brooks.
Jay.
How you doing?
How you doing, buddy?
Morning, buddy.
Good morning. Good morning, guys. Good morning. Oh, doing excellent. Doing excellent. What a beautiful day. Beautiful start to a day. A little snow maybe tomorrow, maybe Monday, huh? That's about time, right?
Heck yeah. No doubt. You sent me a picture from Chelan.
Let's try and get excited about the commute on Monday morning voice right there.
You sent a picture from Chelan the other day, buddy. It was flat calm on Chelan when you were over the other day. Tell us what was going on in Lake Chelan, man.
It was in the mid-40s. It was like glass. I was waiting for a jet skier to go by. You know, we were out there kokanee fishing, and it did not feel like the middle of January at all. We were out there with my good friend Jeff Witowski of Daryl and Dad's Guide Service. It was a non-guided trip, by the way. Jeff has known my dad and my family for almost 20 years. It was just a kickback. Let's go have some fun. Let's relax. Let's not do the guide thing. Let's just have a good time. And we put my son Ryan through the ringer, of course. He actually got to play the guide part where he's working the downriggers and the baits and all that kind of fun stuff. And my old man was out there with us, and it was just so much. It was perfect. It was, if you ever have one of those perfect fishing days, it was a perfect fishing day. We caught lots of fish and great weather.
Beautiful.
So what was the program now? Were you trolling way down deep? What was the drill? You mentioned the cha-cha squitter and the coconut. I mean, you guys are becoming like bass fishermen with all your crazy names here. What are you using, man?
That'd probably be Bobby at Max Lure there. He's been probably sitting at his desk, you know, what kind of crazy name can I come up with now? You know, Bobby Lewis. Jeff actually helps design a lot of those things. And one thing I was talking with Jeff yesterday, and I actually updated the blog last night for anybody who read it. If you notice in the photos, we're using a yellow coconut, which is a little lure, which kind of like got a little – like a, I could see like a popper head if you ever fish poppers for bass and crappie, and a little tinsel tail on there with double hooks. But he added a really small smile blade. And I asked him, I said, hey, I noticed my photos going through him, the smile blade, but on the product line at Max, it doesn't have that. And he started laughing. He goes, I can't believe you picked up on that. And he goes, and I actually went in there and he said how he says, you know, I said he won't divulge his secret sauce for his corn. He actually does. He goes, I have no secrets. He goes, that I put that smile blade on. I put that on there, you know, do that. So look at the photos on the blog if you really want to go over there. But, yeah, so those are the lures, the sling blade dodger, which you can bend and give some really good action. And then that thing's whipping around back there, 100 feet down. We never changed the depth from our downriggers, but we changed the depth in where we're at in the lake. And for anybody who fishes Lake Chelan Kokanee and can't figure it out, that's why. We'll be fishing in 350 feet of water, nothing. We crossed that 400-foot line, and every rod went off. As soon as we hit the 450-foot line, nothing. So we just did circles.
Really?
And then
so
to prove it,
they're hanging on that 400 line.
Well, for now. He says some days they're at 300, some days they're at 600. He can't figure out why they move to the different depths of the lake as far as the depth of the actual overall part of the lake, but they're consistently at that 100-foot line. And maybe Nelly would know a little more about this. I'm guessing maybe it has to do with the water temperature, and as you get deeper, that thermocline might change.
So two things, thermocline and halocline. Thermocline is obviously temperature. There is kind of a low level of mineral. I hesitate to use the word salinity, but that's not pure fresh water in Chelan, right? It's got a lot of minerals in it. So that may be one thing. The other thing you want to look at is that deep scattering layer. Look underneath it because you know that krill, there is a mysis shrimp, a freshwater shrimp in Lake Chelan, and they'll hang on top of that too. So if you're seeing kind of a haze that may like infer just kind of a halocline or a thermocline in that water column, that may be what it is that deep scattering layer is keeping those fish in that portion of the water column.
There you go. And to prove his point, we went from the north shore to the south shore, and so we crossed over the middle of the lake, about 600 feet. As soon as we hit the 400-foot line, bam, fish on again. Got in the 300-foot line, nothing. Back, you know. And so it was on both sides of the lake where it hit the 400-foot line. So I think Nelly just hit the nail on the head right there with that one. So
that's where it'd be kind of cool. How big were the kokanee? How big were they, buddy?
What's that? Oh, Jeff does them by age versus size. You know, he'll tell you that's a 2-year-old, that's a 3-year-old, and then they spawn about in their third year there. So anything from the 8 to 12-inch mark was you'd say that's a 2-year-old fish. You know, like basically like slow down on reeling. If it comes off, it comes off. But then try to get those 3-year-olds. The 3-year-olds, we got some up to about 15, 16 inches. Nothing huge. What happened was, and people wonder why Chelan doesn't get the big kokanee, way back in the, I think it was the 30s, the 20s or 30s or 40s, somewhere in there, in the around the, you know, the 1900s, the kokanee are not native to the lake. So the I guess back then, it wasn't even a Fish and Game Department, whoever decided to do this, they brought in Whatcom Lake stock for the kokanee. Well, now these kokanee, I call them wild. They're not native. They're wild. They all go up in the streams. They just still plant it, but they most of these kokanee spawn in all the tributaries. Unfortunately, the original stock that they used were small fish. So genetically, these are small fish. A couple of years ago, probably about 15 years ago, we had a good run of decent-sized kokanee. Those were the planted fish that came in, and they planted them from, I can't remember which lake it was, not the Wallawa strain, but one of the other strains that they used for hatchery. But that's why these fish are so small. They're genetically just going to be small. They're not, you're not going to get the Lake Roosevelt big, you know, 3, 4, 5 pounders, unfortunately.
Now, how do you cook them? I mean, they're bony little buggers. How do you cook them so you can kind of avoid the bones, man?
Yeah, the best way to cook these fish, my son Ryan figured this out for us, is he wrapped them in tinfoil and baked them. And actually, like you pointed out yesterday, Rob, when we were talking, he's actually steaming them because they're so full of oil. But what that does is it allows you to scrape the skin off and grab the bone, the backbone, and lift it up. And all you have left is a pile of meat. And two kokanee actually gave me a half of a paper plate full of fish when I was over there with him for dinner. And I was like, you know, people laugh about catching a 10-inch kokanee, but two or three of these things, you have basically the same amount of meat as a sockeye fillet when you cook yourself for the barbecue.
Yeah, no kidding, dude. And anybody that turns their nose up at that beautiful, flavorful flesh that is a kokanee, you know, seriously.
Dude, I don't know anybody who does that.
I don't know either. The Vortex Spitfire HD. There you go. That's my favorite. The Vortex Spitfire HD Gen 2 was the subject of a blog that you laid down on the Outdoor Line earlier this week. You have just a beautifully illustrated blog going on here. Give us your impressions of this, the new optic coming out from Vortex Optics.
So coming up, the Spitfire is incredible. I mean, it's super easy to mount, super easy to sight in, extremely accurate. The one I have is the 3-power. The post for it is perfect for turkey hunting because it's actually three dash dots or three dashes for a half circle or a three-quarter circle and a post with a dot in the middle. So it fits the turkey's head perfectly. And I got a hold of Mark Borderman. I told him, I get you guys design these things for, you know, law enforcement, target practice, and those things. But yeah, this is a turkey hunter's dream right here. And so they sent me a couple of the Spark Solar. So I'm going to be testing for turkey season, which is a totally different red dot sight. But the best thing about the Spark Solar is it is solar augmented, meaning that it switches between battery and solar power. So you never have to really turn it off throughout your entire day of hunting, which is perfect. So that way, you know, you're sitting in your stand, you can turn your red dot. You don't have to reach up and hit the button when the turkey's coming in. So again, I told these guys, I get you have the tactical aspect of this, but this is you guys need to get into turkey hunting. This is a turkey hunting, you know, red dot sight. The coolest thing about the Spark Solar, it's got what's called auto detect, which is it turns itself off, but it turns itself back on with motion. So you can have this sight on, literally, you can leave it on and never have to worry. It's in the gun cabinet. It's going to turn itself off.
And
the second you move that shotgun, it's going to turn on.
The Spark does not have magnification, and the Spitfire is a 3-power or a 5-power.
That is correct. That is correct. And they have different sights. So the Spitfire has the black post that's not illuminated with a dot in the middle that is, plus the 3-quarter horseshoe that's dashed that's illuminated. So that fits the turkey
head
perfectly.
Check that out on the blog.
So, Jason, do you have to go pat? You got to go pattern your shotgun though when you put this thing on there, because you're going to be. Do you have to zero this thing in, because it's not going to be right on with your shotgun? How do you sight this thing in and make sure your pattern's correct where you're putting the red dot?
That is the best thing about using these red dots for turkey hunting. So just for example, we had a crossfire last year on a 410, and we were using the TSS loads, which is tungsten, number 9 shot, little tiny pellets, right? People are like, oh, you're going to shoot up for turkey. That's wrong. That's, you know, you shouldn't do that. That's not enough. My son killed two birds last year, one at 40 yards, one at 45 yards, and dropped them dead. Because here's the thing, that tungsten, it carries. It doesn't drop like lead. It does, you know, a lot of shot is affected by it's so lightweight that it loses its energy really quick. That tungsten carries its mass out there. The red dot itself was like 3 inches above the gold bead. I mean, it carries. And so that's what's important is a lot of people, they miss their turkey because they're actually shooting low or they don't really pattern it very well. the red dot gets it to where, okay, I know where I'm going to be turkey hunting. I know my average shot. I know my farthest shot's going to be like 40, 45. I'm going to pattern it for that far shot. And you can adjust it. I was amazed at how high the red dot was above the bead on the shotgun, and it carried out there. And it killed those turkeys like right now. So the red dot for the turkey hunter, it's a game changer. It's a total game changer. And this Spark Dude. Solar is going to be a serious game changer when you can leave it on all day long.
I'm going to peel the vent rib off my Browning A5 Wicked Wings and put a pick rail barrel on there. That's it, baby. I'm putting a spark on there. He's Jason Brooks, outdoor writer. Jason, thanks for your time, buddy. We'll talk to you soon, my friend. Let's go bend a rod.
Thank you, Jay. We'll be talking, man.
Sounds good. Take care, guys. All right,
man.
Good morning.
All right, coming up next, the hottest report we've heard all week and the techniques you need to succeed. It's RoyRobinsonChevy.com's Really? Where? And it's next here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
No way.
You gotta be kidding me.
Really? Where?
It's coming back. The island of Tinny and the Lady.
Where'd you get him, man? No way. You gotta tell me. I'm not gonna tell anybody.
The ocean turned red.
Hey, man, can you tell me where you got him?
I'll never put on a life jacket again.
Welcome to RoyRobinsonChevy.com's Really? Where?
Where?
Roy Robinson Chevrolet RV will take you anywhere.
Really?
You loved your 10-speed bike as a kid? Time to step up to your 10-speed truck with the Allison Transmission Duramax-powered 2020 Chevy Silverado 2500 HD. Here's your reason to switch. $3,750 cash allowance at Roy Robinson Chevrolet, RoyRobinsonChevy.com. Robbo.
Last 8 days of duck hunting this week. We talked about this earlier in the show. Definitely a great week to get out there and burn up the rest of duck season here. Got a great weather forecast. It's going to be good. Bill mentioned earlier in the show that we've been drying out here. And actually, this period of dry weather is really good. It's going to concentrate the ducks again. With all that sheet water we have, with all the flooding and everything we had last couple weeks, ducks are spread out all over the place. This next week's going to be hammer time. Now, we've got some bonus days for light geese, for snow geese in February. Check out the WDFW website to get a handle on when those days are going to occur. But this is your last week to get out and do some duck hunting. Also, been a lot of bad news surrounding our steelhead fisheries here on the west side, especially with the not fishing from a boat ban on the coast. But I tell you what, there are steelhead pouring into the coastal rivers right now. It's been good, folks. And just don't let the bad news get to you. Put your waders on, get out there and do some bank fishing. Maybe use the boat for transportation, whatever you got to do. But
or go support some of those guides out there. Book a trip.
For sure.
Yeah, no doubt.
And the hotels and the diner and everything else out in Forks. Those coastal rivers have been good. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Nooch and some of these rivers close by here have some steelhead head in them as well. We also got news yesterday that we're going to have a catch and release season on the Sauk and Skagit coming up here this spring, February 1st through April 15th, catch and release wild steelhead season on the Skagit River system, 4 days a week, Saturdays through Tuesdays, from February 1st through the 15th of April, from Concrete on up to Marble Mount, the Skagit will be open, and from the mouth of the Sauk on up to Darrington, it'll be open. It's a great opportunity to get out, chase some wild steelhead. There's not going to be a lot of fish in there, but there'll be enough to get out and have a good time, maybe hook a couple. And the Skagit's a good place to kind of use some of your old school techniques, too. You know, we were talking about fishing rubber worms and jigs and all that stuff, and that's all great. But, man, it's cool to go throw a spoon. Or do some fly fishing. I mean, some of those bars up there are legendary in the fly fishing world. You know, the fly bar and some of the stuff on the upper Skagit as well. Great place to swing fly, throw spoons. You can cover a lot of water with spoons. When I was guiding up there, I always had a couple of spinning rods rigged up with spoons, and we were floating in between runs. I'd say, hey, fire it in there. Hit that spot right there. And we were always casting spoons all over the place in between runs. It really lends itself well to some of that old school stuff that people don't do anymore, you know?
Yeah, no question about it. And so much fun. So typically this week we are talking about show season. Well, I got news for you. Show season is taking place. Start online, mm-hmm. end up on the water. The Seattle Boat Show Connected takes place January 28th through 31st. And here to hit the highlights is none other than the president of the NMTA, the Northwest Marine Trade Association, our good friend George Harris. Good morning, George.
George, good morning.
Hey guys, good morning. Great to be here.
So how's it going? How's it looking for this
adjustments.
Week? Yeah.
Well, you know, this time of year, I'm always thinking about the move-in. You know, how are we going to get those boats into the building? I'm worrying about snow and that sort of thing. But I'm pleased to report all 543 boats have been moved in, and we're looking good. We're going to open in 5 days. I like to think we're kind of like Netflix this year. We're getting ready to drop 83 brand new episodes of boating and fishing seminars. Tom, you're going to be a big part of those. So if you need something to watch, log on Thursday starting at 4 p.m. And then we're also a little bit like Zillow this year, and these 800 boats and products are going to be super smooth to view the boats, videos, 3D tours of the boats, easy appointment setting with these businesses. And I think that's a really important point. These businesses are set up to meet with you, take all your questions, even if you're just looking, thinking about a boat a year from now or a month from now, they want to talk with you.
One of the aspects of this year that we've just gone through, George, is the fact that nobody anticipated the demand for boats. It's been nuts. So many of our boat manufacturers, outboard tackle companies a whole bit, had experienced their best year ever, unfortunately due to the demise of the travel industry. But inventories are phenomenally low. If you're serious about getting a boat, you better get on the stick and get online here to the SeattleBoatShow.com.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Tom. Our members had a really good second half of the year. They were really hustling with, we saw sales and participation up. And I was thinking about it like this the other day. You know, when you try to go into Les Schwab when it's snowing hard in the past to get your chains, it's hard to get the chains. So that's a little bit what's going on here. So if anybody's thinking about upgrading or getting into boating this summer, I think they should start now.
Yeah, you're right. I've mentioned this on the show the last couple of weeks. I've been loading up on all of our supplies for Alaska this summer. And I'm telling you what, I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's boats, outboard motors, or hooks, swivels, get right down to the terminal tackle. Everything is very difficult to get ready. You got to get on it right now. And just going to the boat show online this week is going to be a good start to that. You got to get an early jump on this stuff. Don't wait. Do not wait. If you're thinking about buying something, do it literally online at the show, because you might not get it. Really a lot of demand, and there's some supply issues. A lot of this stuff comes from China, or maybe one little part comes from China or Mexico or somewhere else, and some of this stuff is being held up a little bit. So you got to get on it right now, and logging on to the show here this next week is gonna be a big part of that.
Yeah, so it's you know, we've also got Boat Show TV, which is going to be 34 hours of a live broadcast for the show. And I think, you know, sometimes, you know, a virtual boat show sounds like an oxymoron, you know, like jumbo shrimp. You know, what are we doing here? But there is absolutely a live component to this show. And when you come to the website during the show hours, you'll see Boat Show TV going on with our own Peter Schrappen and Denise Whitaker from Como News being the host. And they're going to be interviewing kind of who's who and famous people from the marine industry. So Tom, you're going to help kick off the show on Thursday. We've got Chef Ethan Stoll, Mark Bunzel, who publishes the Wagoner Cruising Guide, or if you're a Below Deck fan, you know, Captain Sandy and Captain Lee are going to be on there. So that'll be going on. And then, you know, like I said, all these businesses are setting up tents at their dealerships with extra inventory, and they want to meet with you.
Well, Robbo made a great point too, is that look, if you're looking to get geared up this year, with gear, you need to get your summer gear in spring. You need to get your fall gear in summer, and we're going to have some opportunities here. I know Three Rivers Marine right now has a few Duckworth build slots to go, and that may be one of the things that you need to look at too, because if you think you want a boat for this summer, you know, I realize that anybody that bought an acre and a half of land in Western Washington was automatically issued an old aging fiberglass boat on a rusted trailer. I get it, right? But, you know, even to get parts for that thing, you know, is going to take some preparation. And this year is going to be a challenge with supplies. But look, we've set this boat show deal. I recorded six different seminars, and in doing so, tried to, you know, point guys the right direction with the right kind of products and the right kind of info to get you a fast start. Because you know yourself, George, we've been kind of suffering through this decreasing opportunity deal with regard to saltwater opportunity in particular, and so the way to get a fast start on our seasons is jumping onto these seminars, clicking on some of the fishery information that you like, and you're going to get off to a faster start. It's going to make you more successful on the water, George Harris.
Well, and one minute. So so many new people buying boats now.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a great way to go and just learn about everything that's out there. Like you said, the seminars, but then also talking with all the boat manufacturers,
100%.
People who sell boats. It's a great tool.
Yeah, no doubt about it, George. I think you've done a great job here, and I look forward to sitting down with Peter Trappin and Denise on Thursday to kind of kick this off, because I think it's something, you know, even though I'm sure we're going to be in person next year, I think this is going to kind of echo and make some other parts of the show available in the future. Do you kind of see that a little bit as far as an enhancement of what you got online?
I do. I think we've built this for the long haul, and we have such a wide audience from all over Washington State, all across the country. You know, we've already sold tickets into 42 states and Canadian provinces. So this is really just a way to amplify what we do, and I think especially with the seminars and the education, it's here to stay.
Register now. Don't miss out. Tickets starting at $5. Start online. End up on the water. He's George Harris of the Seattle Boat Show, connected January 28th through the 31st. George, thank you for your time this morning, and keep in touch, my friend.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, guys. See you at the show.
Thank you, George. Have a great weekend.
You betcha. You missed any of the show, make sure you jump on theoutdoorline.com and grab those podcasts, mynorthwest.com, or we got podcasts on the podcast app on Apple.
Yep.
So jump on those too. You can follow Rob Ensley at Rob Ensley on Instagram, at Joey Pyburn on Instagram. Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram tag is at The Outdoor Line. For Matt Nelson, our Seattle studios, Rob Ensley coming at us from Gig Harbor, Joey Pyburn joining me in the Tulalip Roy Robinson Chevy RV studios. This is Tom Nelson. This has been The Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle.